what, May 13th, 2024, the 219th episode of Science of the Southland, which I told Akshay to make a tagline, and he said it's the show about Georgia Tech sports where numbers meet narrative. I think he stole that from something. Don't know from what, but I keep noticing things that he's stealing from in terms of like weird taglines. So I guess that's ours now. Akshay's not here. I'm Jack Purdy. Jake Grant also not here. So we had to call in the cavalry to help make this episode happen. We got Maggie Scruggs, our lovely softball slash football, beat writer for softball, and then column writer for football. And then now, welcome to the Second Timers Club. We don't have jackets like for SNL. But Madison Myers is back to help us talk about softball and everything else. And firstly, congrats to both of you for graduating. That's a big deal.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
So let's pop in to start. First main thing, all of us were in school when Lorella Kubai was playing with the women's basketball team, and she just made the Atlanta Dream's final roster, which is really cool because she had a couple stints in their practice squad, but keeps playing in Italy at home. Big problem for me is I have her jersey, but it's her New York Liberty jersey. So I got to figure something out. I don't know if the WNBA has jersey assurance, but I got to work on that. so hopefully I can fix that. And then with the Bobby Dodd Stadium, we kept talking about how that's being all torn down. The Edge building is even more torn down now. If you go on campus, like you can't even drive on Techwood anymore. It's very annoying to live. I live on the wrong side of North Ave. So driving anywhere in campus, absolute pain right now, but it's summer, so it's supposed to be. But now they have taken out sections of stadium. It is that you could, they, if you look at the stadium now, there is the part where they said they're going to take out a chunk of the stadium. They have taken out a chunk, which is really weird to look at. I didn't think there would be a hole in our outdoor stadium, but there is a hole in our outdoor stadium. Did either of you see the pictures that came out today?
Yeah, I saw them. It definitely looks weird. But yeah, work in progress. Think it'll be good. When's it supposed to be done by again? Isn't it
2025? Like late 2025, I think is when the whole building's supposed to be done. But those seats are, took them a day to take out a whole section. So they'll, that part, those 4,000 seats are going to, that they're taking out, those will not be, those, like, they already called the season ticket holders that sit there and they're like, we're moving y'all, because they won't be here this season. So it's going to be a weird situation where, it won't be like Vandy where they just don't have an end of a stadium, but there will be active construction. There will be an active construction site there during football season. Madison, did the photos seem weird? What did you see, any of those?
I haven't been able to see the new photos yet, but just like hanging out around campus or driving through campus, it just looks awful. Just I'll like what it's gonna look like in the fall. I guess the next two falls then.
Yeah.
It is not a pretty sight.
No,
and especially during homecoming and things. Ugh.
That's going to be weird. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's the right. I know we had complained on the pod and in other places that we only have 4 regular season Saturday home football games this season. But if it's going to be such a pain to be near the stadium, maybe they kind of just do that in advance. It's just like, let's just minimize the amount of pain to be around the stadium for one season, because it'll be a lot better in 2025. That will not be a problem. But if it's like one edge of the stadium is just not going to be a tenable solution to like let people exist, let's just let them exist on campus longer, I guess. I don't know. One idea there. They also moved the Heisman statue. It's on the other side of the stadium now.
I did not know that.
By the Collins Gate. Yeah. They
that
haven't
makes
like.
Sense.
But yeah, because that is like, that statue was like within the construction zone. So I'm glad they saved Mr. Heisman, because that would have been not a thing to damage. Okay. Let's move on to softball, which is kind of why we're all here. Before the ACC tournament got started last week, Jin Soleo got named second team All-ACC. Mallory Black got named a third team All-ACC. Those are not high enough, in my opinion. Mal should at least be second at worst. The fact that Jin getting second totally deserved, but it just was off the cuff. Like, wait, Jin got second team and Mal didn't get second team, if you're going to put them in one or the other? I mean, all deserved. Like, Jin was fantastic. Her hitting got better. Mallory Black was off the chains good in the two spot. How did y'all react when you saw that?
I was surprised just with how well Mallory Black has been the entire season. She like you said, deserves at least second team. But I was like, Jin, I think a lot of, like, she's obviously a phenomenal defensive player, our best defensive player, and her hitting has got like improved so much this year. It was very impressive. I remember, like, save this for, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but like back when we did the season preview and we were saying like what needs to happen, and it was like a couple players improving their hitting. And we had like play with someone who, you know, she didn't have the best hitting averages in the past, and this year she really upped it, and like ending with 383 in conference play is pretty remarkable. So I'm really happy for her that she finally got like her season to really showcase what she can do. But like it was a good way to go out, you know.
Yeah, she kind of Orlando Arcia'd the whole thing, where it's just like we didn't expect her to like be a big time hitter, and then just was doing a lot of damage in the bottom of the lineup and keeping that. Like Ella Edgman was top of the lineup, kind of lost that spot, which made sense when Sarah Beth Allen is getting voluntarily walked half the time. And it just, yeah, it made the 1-9 feel like a cohesive 1-9, which was really cool.
Yeah.
So we had, so going into the ACC tournament, we knew we had Virginia Tech lined up in the quarterfinal pretty far in advance just because of how the standings shook out. Based on Jake's predicting stuff that he's built and whatnot, it seemed pretty clear that we were not going to make the big tournament unless we basically won the ACC tournament. Just with even a surprise win would be great, but we kind of needed a little bit more because we didn't have a statement series win throughout the season. But this Virginia Tech game, we talked about the series we had with them. Basically, they just hit all over us before we even had a shot to get in these games. And Sophia Voiles was on fire, and somehow Virginia Tech only hit one homer, which is surprising considering they hit 110 going into the game. So did either of you get to watch this game? I was just, the fact we got a 6-2 win blew me out of the water. I knew that was a big moment for them to finally kind of reach that hill they knew they could climb.
I didn't get to watch it, but I kept up with the score. Yeah. As it was going on, the stats and everything, just streamed the live stats. But yeah, I mean, after looking at Virginia Tech, I know they have one of the best offenses in the country. So seeing that they only hit two runs against us definitely was huge. Yeah, Voiles had a really good year, so happy for her that she kind of got to go out on that note with that win. So
yeah, we knew Voiles was gonna start. That was, I mean, there was just no one else to really throw in that situation, and the fact she threw the next day was impressive too, because that had never happened all season. And I was kind of expecting like, okay, they just throw Kinsey in the next game, and then nope, they threw Sophia, because that is kind of what you do in postseason softball.
She's been throwing really well.
You throw your best as long as you can throw them until their arms fall off. It's kind of the rule there, I would say. I've got to highlight, let's say Jaden Gailey hit a homer to get the scoring started, but I have to mention the Grace Connolly homer. When I talked to some coaches in the past, they had mentioned that just Grace just wasn't having not having the best season at all. Like she was supposed to be kind of in that regular rotation of starters, and then just kind of fell off. No real fault of her own, but just, it just didn't work out. She was hitting sub 200, had six hits going into the game, and then hits her first homer of the season in a 2-1 game, a 3-1 game to make it a 6-1 game with her first homer of the season. That was the most unlikely person on this team to hit that homer that wasn't a pitcher. And I could not believe, I texted a couple, like the SID, and we were both like, what are we watching? None of that made sense whatsoever. It wasn't at the Miami touchdown level of like, what the hell is going on? But it was like approaching that level of unlikelihood of what the hell is going on. And that's the Mets of the win, which is big. And Madison Caulfield came in, who I was wondering if they were going to throw her, because her ERA was good. She had limited appearances, but had been good when we threw her. So that was really promising to see that she spins the ball like crazy. And that's a big thing. Madison, do you ever get to see Michaela throw it all in any of the games you went to this year, or do you miss her?
I think I maybe got to see her once or twice. I don't think I got to see, because she didn't really play that. She, like you said, she didn't really play that much. So I don't, was very limited the times I got to see her. But I saw some of the like highlights from this game when I was, you know, because I wasn't able to watch. So I went back and watched some of the videos they were posting. It was phenomenal watching the like those three innings. She's really, really good. And like, I know we're going to have, next year we're losing two starters, so that's huge that she can fill like that role in this next year. She's going to be a clear starter, because that was a phenomenal way to end the game, because we saw what happened in the next game when
yes
didn't have like someone solid to go in and like finish out the game. So
Yeah, I was yeah having her. I mean, the recruiting cavalry is coming. There is that recruiting class was top 10 for a reason, and there's some pitching coming in with that. But getting her in that the highest leverage situation we have had all season, and she delivered big time. Yes, the semifinal game we faced Florida State. We had not made a semifinal since 2012, which I believe was also against Florida State, which we won. I completely forgot this fact that they put on the TV then. We have the second most ACC tournament wins. We have 5, but Florida State has like 17 of them. Like, it is a massive gap. They just keep winning these things. But yeah, Boyles, we lost 10-2 in 5 innings. Boyles kept it close for a while again, which was really promising to see that she could do it on back-to-back days, having never done it on back-to-back days in her Tech career so far. They took her, Morales took her out after a homer that got to, what was it, Florida State's second run. So it was on a she was on a short lease, and then sadly, Kenzie Dorton couldn't exactly keep things rolling. I mean, it made more sense to throw Kinsey, I think, than Caulfield in that game anyway. So that game went as predicted, I would say. That was if you played the game 100 times, that result was happening probably 80 times. So not concerned. The fact they made the semifinal and got a statement win finally at the last gasp they could was a big deal. So 32-23 record. I think we would also say that is a rousing success after, at least Madison, what we had talked about earlier this year in terms of like what they like needed to, what the hump they needed to clear. Did any of us seeing the hitting turn into what it turned into? I assume not.
Nope.
That was
insane year of hitting. Insane. Just every single player picked it up. Like, it was remarkable because we were thinking, like, you know, maybe 2-3 players, you know, they keep their batting average high enough to be able to sustain the team to like around 500,
right,
just above 500. And it was every player down the lineup. Had like, I mean, there weren't many who were below 300, which was like just crazy when you have what it was like 7 of the 9 were batting above 300, something like that.
Yeah, Maui Black set 373, Jin Soleo 338, Dobbins 318, SBA 317, Ella 3. I don't need to keep reading it. Everyone down to Reese Hunter and Abby Hughes. It was only Hunter, Hughes, and Mangini who were sub 300 of the regular starters. And then on the bench, Grayson Tucker, in her 17 at-bats, hit 471. Gracie Hillman hit 297 in her 37 at-bats. And Bailey Chapin was 273 in her 11. So, yeah, I mean, but yeah, up and down. I mean, with the outlier of Grace Connolly, who absolutely redeems herself in the Virginia Tech game. Yeah, no, it was Hunter Bunch. I mean, I did an article. Go back and read my article. Just search Hunter Bunch Tech hitting and my interview with him should come up. But basically they did reframe how they were hitting. They made some real mechanical adjustments and it worked, and they just, whatever they were doing before kind of locked them up a bit, and they were like, nah, just swing how you want to swing. And we saw Jin Soleo's stance turn from pretty narrow to her front foot's by home plate and her back foot's by like near first base. Like, it's a wide stance. I mean, all of them just kind of found that. Yeah, team average went from 262 to 309 year over year.
Wow.
That's not normal.
Yeah.
Slugging went from 433 to 557, which, yes, hitting a lot of homers will do it. This is what I'm most proud of. Our strikeouts went from 252 in 2023 to 199 this year. We had the last sub 200 strikeout season we had that wasn't COVID was 2001. We hadn't had a sub.
I was born.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Y'all are 2000s babies. Oh, God. Yeah. The mixture of plate discipline and mixing it with output, not just being disciplined and not hitting, but being able to do both. That's when you can do that, you can win a lot of games. And they probably could have won. I think we could say there's a few more they could have won. They had definitely had some clutch hitting in the middle of all that. But that was big. I think all of us would say, like, any given game you do, we could just out hit anybody, which is kind of how we play baseball and softball right now. Is like, the pitching, we'll figure it out. The hitting, we got that. We got that on lockdown.
Yeah.
I mean, Maggie, you were writing about some of these games when we went to a couple of them. Like, I don't know how much you were tracking beforehand, but did you kind of feel that going to watching and writing about these games? Like, okay, I knew there's some weird, there was always some hitting stat. You're like, okay, this is a cool thing to keep writing about.
Oh yeah. I mean, watching the offense was so fun. I mean, in every sport, I like more offense over defense, so it's super fun for me. But yeah, one thing I noticed, kind of reiterating what y'all said, is like, I felt like every article that I wrote, there was never one player consistently like it was, you know, every article, it wasn't like it was only Mallory Black hitting home runs.
Right.
Like, I mean, it literally was spread across every single player in the lineup was a huge threat and always like contributed. So that was really cool to see. But yeah, I think every game I went to, trying to think, I think I went to like four or five games. I think every single one of them was a run rule. Sure.
That's nice. That's nice.
I know. I'm like, maybe I should have gone to more, kept that trend going.
Yes,
But
yes.
yeah, no, super fun to watch. I never really been like, I mean, I kept up with it, but I never really been super into softball before this year. So getting into it and writing about it was definitely really, really fun. Fun to watch. So
This was a good gateway drug here.
yeah.
Madison, were there anyone else? We mentioned Saleha, but was there anyone else on the team that you were just like, oh, they made a leap that really caught your eye?
I mean, I so Tiffany Domingue, I know she's graduating now because she was only here for her grad year, but I remember when like seeing when she was coming in, looking at her stats from, you know, her previous school, and it was a much smaller school.
Yeah.
Like, she did really well there, but I was nervous. Like, you never know with the jump coming to a bigger school, especially like the pitching in ACC is like it's pretty decent. But I thought she was phenomenal like the whole year. I felt like especially when we needed her in really clutch moments, like she came up big. And like her stats aren't all that flashy, so like overall throughout the season, like maybe she wasn't like the most standout, but I felt like in a lot of really clutch moments, like she came up really big to pull out wins or like just try and make a last ditch effort to try and get a win. So I like that was fun to have her on the team, even if it was just for a year. But I thought like Reese Hunter last year, like she didn't have like the biggest jump to this year, but I thought she did pretty good moving into like a more like last year she was only, you know, coming in for a couple games here and there, and this year being a, you know, a regular starter, I thought she handled it pretty well. And just seeing all of the like the rest of the team, how much they jumped from last year to this year, who were starters, I can just imagine what she's going to do in this next offseason. Going into here, it's going to be great. I mean, she was almost in double digits home runs. She's, you know, at 275, which is, it's not terrible. It's pretty
Great.
decent enough to
Yeah.
get us to, it's a promising start. So I'm excited to see what she was able, what she will be able to do. And I thought, you know, she was pretty good defensively. You know, there's always a couple of hiccups here and there, but yeah,
Yeah.
I'm excited as like a young player that will probably be on a core part of the team with so many people graduating.
Yeah, we with they had they tried Sarah Beth out a couple times back there, and that experiment did not last all too long. So yeah,
No.
she started 51 of the 53 games behind the dish. Yeah, her average jumped from 219 to 275 year over year. So I mean, and also kind of I mentioned who was it with Saleha like kind of reinforcing the back of the lineup. 275, where Hunter was sitting in that 6 to 8 spot, that'll reinforce that part of the line. Like they didn't need her to be the power hitter. Like hit how what she did in that spot was totally great. Like more than we could ask for. And she slugged 500 too. Yeah, that was great to see. And also just to know we have a reliable catcher. Like after losing Emma Kalf, we're just like, all right. I mean, yeah, you need we Reese was basically the only feasible option to hold that spot, and she held her own more than enough. So yeah, I think that's a great spot there. And yeah, and what Dominic, very Martin Prado vibes to me. I don't know if y'all know him from the Braves, but he was just kind of just that. Did a little bit of everything. Second baseman could play all the infield positions. We didn't need Tiffany to do all that, of course. But just reliably would just poke the ball solidly. And sure enough, hits 311, gets 50 hits, doubles and homers over intermixed, good slugging. All of it was great. Didn't strike out that much either. Key thing there. Didn't strike out. So, which that was the case for everybody. Okay. Other notes. Sarah Beth Allen, 51 walks this year. Fourth in single season program history. If she had two more, that would have put her. Okay, second technically, but first is so unattainable that it's just one of those unbreakable records. Jenny had 88 in 2010, when she was treated like Barry Bonds at the top of the lineup. They would walk her with the bases loaded kind of stuff. So like no one's ever touching that ever again. That's ignoring the best outlier ever. She was very, very close to one of the best walk seasons. And then Mal Black's 19 homers are tied for seventh in program history, second in the ACC this year. Sarah Beth had 16, that tied her for fifth. The team had 89 homers over the season, which I think doubled, I think was more than our last two seasons combined, if I believe, if I remember correctly. the explosion was crazy. That I think that's that's the best part of being an Atlanta sports fan is you're going to see a lot of three pointers hit a lot of home runs, no matter what you're watching. That's just how that goes. So it's really fun. Okay, let's touch on the pitching. My main point is thank goodness that Sophia Voiles and Kinsey Norton existed this year, because behind them, it was not looking pretty, to put it plainly.
Yeah. I don't know, because we had a new pitching coach this year as well, right?
Yeah, we did. Aaron Dixon. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, like, what happened with Blake and Chandler that just destroyed them? They, I mean, like, they had, you know, a couple good games here and there, but that, their ERAs just shot up. I mean, 5-2 and 5-7-6 is from two people who were like our aces before.
Yeah.
It's pretty tough to see, and it was tough to watch as well, because I know that they were probably in their heads like, this is the year, final year, and like we were so, you know, three starters and stuff, and it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I know, yeah, because we saw Blake, she had a no hitter a couple years ago. Like, she was a strikeout machine. Mm-hmm. Like, and she had speed. She had, like, she was ferocious to watch.
She still has strikeouts of this season.
Right. Yeah. It's just the wildness is just a little bit more. She had, 58 walks, 69 strikeouts, and more strikeouts than walks, but still 58 walks in 15 less innings than Sophia had. And she had 52 walks in the season. So, I mean, yeah, that's the crushing part from 2 years. I think it was the crushing part last year as well. It's just like we saw Blake and Chandler do so well in that tournament year and then regressed a little bit. And then just keep going slides. Not a huge, not another, another backslide would have had them out of the, would have had the numbers look way, way worse. But they kind of hovered around where they were, which they were service. They won some ACC games. It's not like they were like unusable or anything like that. But I think that speaks to what the launch pad is now going forward with Sophia and Kinsey and Madison. Or, I mean, McKenzie. Not McKenzie, Michaela. I think I called her McKenzie Caulfield multiple times. It's Michaela. Oh, well. And then Jaden Studebaker is also there. She has been just the, whenever the game's kind of out of hand, pitcher for most of the time. So, but she's there if we need her. And hopefully she'll make a leap next year as well. So we have at least four pitchers in line for next year before the freshmen come in. Maggie, any pitching thoughts before we move on to the last bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say only thing I remember before the season, whenever I was kind of looking at stuff, I expected Blake Nelliman to have a huge year like y'all are talking about. So kind of interesting that she just fell off. Kind of sucks for her. Sad. But, you know, Wells had a great year. Norton had a good year. Pretty much everything y'all said. Yeah.
Boyle's 219 batting average against Nelliman was at 253, but add in the walks and it gets a little different there. Kinsey Norton, 267, was specifically a ground ball pitcher, though, so was going to naturally have a few more hits, so not terribly concerned there. And then Michaela Caulfield was at 280, Dennis at 279. There was, outside of Boyle's, it did feel like everyone else, if they got hit on, it would come in bunches. That trend we never... It got a little bit better from last year, but that trend's still coming. I trust Aaron. Aaron's great. They love her to death over there, so I know that and she's been a instrument in the next recruiting cycle too as well. So next year will be like Aaron Dixon's pitchers are the ones coming next. So that'll be interesting to see how that pans out. I trust whoever we come to hit, Hunter Bunch will do more than enough to make them great, because made this lineup that was. This is mostly the same players from last year, and the average went up what it did with basically the same group plus Domingue. So that was interesting to think. So yeah, missed the NCAA tournament. The recruiting class coming in is going to be great. That's, I think, the takeaway and just kind of what we wait for until next season. There'll be, of course, we'll hear what the 2026 recruiting classes over the summer and then the fall and whatnot. Yeah, any parting shots, last thoughts of this baseball season? I mean, not baseball, softball season.
I hope that they can do that Clearwater tournament again next year.
Oh, yes. That's a good call. Yeah.
It was unfortunate the way that tournament went. I wish they won that first Minnesota game, because I think it could have changed a lot of the season.
Yeah.
That they didn't have those other two games canceled. I know that the Tennessee one was like in the middle of the game or something, but I think if they are, you know, invited to go back to that again next year, I would think they were. I feel like this is a pretty decent season they had. So I would hope. That if they can come away from that with at least one win, like, I think that they are set up for much more success, you know, with a much stronger schedule as well for, you know, an NCAA record toward, like, to be able to go to the tournament maybe. And if, I mean, we'll see how the freshmen are, all of the newcomers, since we have like so many people leaving. But it's very promising going forward that we just saw how much the new coaches are able to make adjustments to these players. You know, like, I think I have a lot more confidence with new players coming in just because I know these coaches are figuring out their hitting a lot better. So.
Agreed. Maggie, get the final word.
Yeah, I would agree. Definitely very promising just based off of everything we've seen. Like, I mean, just looking at those, going back to those offensive stats of like the team average going up and strikeouts decreasing and all of that. I mean, just seeing that, those numbers are insane. So it's definitely very promising. Recruiting class being as good as it is, also super promising. So I think it's a bright future going forward. Bummed we weren't able to make the NCAA tournament, but I mean, I guess that was sort of expected. But yeah, I mean, overall, not a bad year. I think it slightly exceeded expectations, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, arrows pointing up for sure. 32-23, 13-13 conference record this year as well, and 9-9 on the road. So did not have the only place we had a losing record was literally the city of Clearwater. Like that was pretty big in the neutral site games compared to last year. They finished 26-27. So got above 500, got safely above 500, which is great. So that's it. That's 2024 softball. Madison, I appreciate you helping here. You're welcome to stay for baseball as long as you want. Baseball was good too. 2-1 series went over Duke. I was gone, so I look at my phone on Sunday and I was like, wait, this happened? I did not see any of that coming. 11-8 win on Friday, 14-10 loss on Saturday, 8-6 win on Sunday. Maggie, did we see that this is the number 9 team in the country we were playing? Like we knew we could, we had been beating good teams all year. Like that's not out of, we knew it was possible, but I don't know. I mean, yeah, I just start saying things because I'm still like trying to comprehend how this happened.
I know. I saw something the other day where at some point in the season, it was some tweet. I don't remember who said it, but we had a like, at some point in the season, some website went and ranked like the toughest schedules left. I think we had like the third toughest schedule left in the country. And since then, we've beaten Virginia Tech, UVA, Duke, swept NC State, won a game against Clemson. I mean, it's like this team is just, I mean, they're starting to gel a little bit. It's just, I mean, I feel like it's the same exact story every single year where it's like,
yes.
We've talked about it. The offense is fantastic, just like softball, the pitching. It's like every single year I'm like, man, I sit back and I'm like, what if our pitching was extraordinary?
What if?
As extraordinary as our offense, you know, what if?
People have been asking this question
every year.
People have been asking this question about this team since we were both single digit age. Like that's just how this team is run. Yeah. All these scores, also just like extremely Georgia Tech baseball scores where the other team is still getting to a number that usually would win them a game, but
14-10 loss. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. That was a good, yeah. Just a solid two touchdowns. Aiden Burr got a field goal. Game one, Geezer went 4-for-5. Absolutely great. Brett Thomas got his first save of the season. That's solid. I mean, we keep winning close, long win games. Game three, Tate McKee. Okay. This is a big thing. Tate McKee against Clemson kind of fell off there after he had a great start against Virginia. Comes back and throws 6.1 innings, his career long. He is becoming that late season, like dark horse pitcher that can actually eat a lot of innings for us, which is really critical for us to have any sustained success in a tight tournament setting. Duke did have a lead middle of the game, but Cam Jones hit a go-ahead single to take the lead. And we had some, I think Bichetti added some insurance runs there. So we have now, with that series win, the second most ACC series wins with 6. Clemson has 7. That's second most in the conference, which is wild considering we're like 2 games over 500 in the ACC. And still in 5th in the Coastal. Our series wins are over number 6. We have series wins now over number 16 Virginia Tech, number 10 Virginia, and number 9 Duke. The football team, I keep making this parallel, but it feels like the exact same thing. It's like, all of our teams, men's basketball included, like, you give us the hardest competition, we will wipe the floor. And then you give us Bucknell, yeah, I don't know. You never know what's going to happen. That's just how it runs, apparently.
You know, it's very funny, slightly off topic, but Georgia Tech sports in general, I feel like, always follows the same trends for every
Yes.
sport. You know, it's like, why? I don't get it. But I know, it's like, how, I don't know.
Our one safe, the one saving grace is volleyball. Volleyball plays yes. like they're supposed to play 95% yes. of the time. They're the, like, Michelle Ecollier has got an absolute tight ship running there, and it shows. Yeah. So 14 and 13.
Shout out to volleyball for that.
They are
everyone else is just slightly chaotic.
Are they my favorites? okay. So we officially qualified for the ACC tournament, which we did expect because the bottom of the Coastal was far enough down where it was pretty safe for us. We're at a 14 and 13 ACC record, which is fifth. I say that. I said Coastal Chaos was dead because, you know, football got rid of divisions. It's still here in baseball. There is only a
Never
one game. It's only a one game separation between Virginia in second place and us in fifth. So there is a. I mean, we have to play Florida State still, which is no gimme at all. Their field also may not be usable. There was lots of
that. I saw some pictures.
Yeah, if you go on Twitter, just search Florida State football baseball field on Twitter, it will show up. But yeah, they had some bleacher problem. Like some, I think the part of the wall may have gotten hit. Some bleachers definitely got hit. So that. Field, you cannot play on that field today if they played. They don't have to wait until Friday. They have to wait until Friday, which is good. But there definitely is no guarantee that they're going to be playing in Tallahassee this weekend. I don't know what the protocol would be, but that's just a thing. But regardless of the pure baseball, they could get swept. I mean, the entire realm of possibilities is in front of us here of getting swept, sweeping, or splitting this. There was one note I found a couple weeks ago where basically if we score 6 or 7 runs, that puts us at a really high win percentage for the season. So it really is purely just a matter of, can we just keep hitting? That's how it's going to have to, in this long-term stretch of the season, that's how it's going to have to work. But once we get to, but I think right now the big telltale sign is like, okay, will we have any postseason successes? How does the pitching look this weekend? Because we're going to have to end up playing teams like Florida State. Assuming we make some sort of regional, we're going to play the top team somewhere in there, and they're going to have better pitching than us in all likelihood. And so we've got to be able to get a guy to throw really well against a crazy team, a la when we had what's his face, who threw 100 miles an hour against Tennessee and threw like 110 pitches.
I don't remember saying, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
Future Jack stepping in here. It was Zach Maxwell. It's going to have to be something like that. So, I forgot to update the RPI. Okay, you start blabbering while I look up the RPI.
Yeah, I was going to say it is interesting how when you look at all of the ACC records of both Atlantic and Coastal teams, they all just look almost identical.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is just crazy to me. I mean, the ACC this year has been extremely competitive. I mean, the fact that we're fifth in the Coastal is just like, what, you know?
we were like squarely in fifth two for a while. Now it's a much different kind of fifth place as well. All right, we were 50th last week in RPI. We are now 48th, which puts us right behind James Madison and Oregon and ahead of Troy, College of Charleston. We've been hovering around Troy this whole time in RPI, so that's they're moving up with us as well. The rankings, it's basically the SEC, the ACC, and then like East Carolina and Oregon State. So it's that's just how baseball is nowadays. So, I mean, the ACC might put like 11 teams in the tournament when it's all said and done. If teams play well enough, which is insane, but that's just how it goes. Yeah. So this puts us more squarely in a tournament field. It feels like we couldn't update Jake's fancy machine that would have told us this, but we were first team out. There's no way in heck we're any worse than the 65th team. In the tournament field at this point, probably beating Duke.
It does make me nervous. It feels like every single thing I've seen, like looking at projections, we're like in the bubble on everything.
Yeah. Which tracks. I mean, like
does track. I mean, it makes sense. It's just like these last few games are going to be crucial. Like we don't need to screw up against Mercer tomorrow, you know? Yeah.
No, we do not. No, assuming that game happens, we're recording Monday night. Yeah. The weather is. Well, I can't see the sky from my bedroom, which has windows. So that's the problem now. So we'll see how that goes down. I do want to just kind of, I've read off some recent baseball results the last couple weeks we've done this, just to kind of get a feel for the trends here. So let's go back to the Miami series. Lost 6-4, win 9-4, win 17-1. in a series where we had it, that's when like we have to start winning games now. Now situation started, and they did that emphatically on Sunday. Clemson, they get a win. They win a 14-12 game because, of course, we win another 14-12 game.
It just makes sense.
Yes. And so Clemson put up 9 runs at least in every game, which is like, okay, not great, but it was Clemson. Couldn't hold off Auburn. And then Duke still puts up 8 runs in 2 of the 3 games, but we're still winning enough of these games. Since Miami, we were 0-1, 2-1, 2-2, 3-2, 3-4, 4-4. We are 5-5 since that Miami series, which sounds fantastic considering who we played in.
Yes.
Clemson and Duke also there.
Agreed.
So I think that's a good sign there, and what it's helping our tournament suggestion as well. And then so 4 games left. If you want to come out tomorrow night, or I guess tonight when people are listening, against Mercer, that is the last home game of the season. That is it. We will, unless by some miracle we end up hosting like a super regional because something crazy happened. But otherwise, that's it.
If we just went out completely, yeah.
Went out completely. Yeah, totally. Florida State, that's at Florida State. Because of how the ACC scheduling works, it is very rare to play them. I remember when I talked to Ben King earlier this season, he was like, he had circled this one because they just never go anywhere in the Atlantic division because that's just how the scheduling works. So that'll be fun. I hope they get to play on campus because just to be able to feel that and not.
I was about to say the one time they actually go and it may not even be played there. Yeah.
Not even there. I did put a suggestion. They could play in Pensacola, or I think you had put down Pensacola, or someone else had put Pensacola that I saw, because the minor league stadium there, like, it sits on the Gulf. So if you hit a homer, it is hitting the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, that's kind of cool, at least.
Yeah. No, it's the most beautiful stadium in Florida, bar none. So there's that's my suggestion for an alternate location. All right. What, any last baseball thoughts here? Like, I mean, I think we're on the same page of like, obviously win, but very delighted at where we are at this point.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, the past few weeks, like, I feel like if I'm not watching the game or at the game and I go look at the score, I'm like, how are we winning? You know, like I've
right.
said, like
yes,
Clemson
yeah.
that one game, like the fact I remember like literally turning off my phone being like, well, guess we're losing this. And then all of a sudden I look on Twitter and we won 14-12 that one game, like it came back that at the end. So yeah, definitely good signs. Offense has historically always been good, but I mean, there's definitely a difference, I feel like, between the beginning of the season and now. They're definitely picking up a little bit. I just, hopefully pitching can pull it together.
The perfect concoction will be, yes, Tate McKee, still great. Vinatieri, still great. Cam Jones, a.k.a. Shohei Ohtani, all great. But then yes. Also, Burris just goes on one of his heaters because he just kind of hits them all in batches. If we can overlap just the right stretch of pitching with Burris literally never getting out, that literally could mean we hold a team to, I don't know, 5 runs, which doesn't usually sound great, but that's amazing for us. And then Burris just gets like 4 RBIs in a game because he just cannot stop barreling baseballs.
Yep,
that's
that would be perfect.
Not out of the realm of possibility. But then also, like softball, the top 7 hitters are hitting over 300.
I mean, like, yeah, it just makes sense for Georgia Tech.
Burris did not homer this weekend, so he's still at 21, but he is, I mean, one more flurry and he'll be up. He'll be knocking on Kevin Parada's door. Will he get there? Probably not, but it's not out of the question.
That's not the question. Yeah.
What going forward? So we've read the rest of the regular season schedule. The ACC tournament is weird. It's a 3-team pool play situation where half the time the third game doesn't even matter, depending on how you did, because tiebreakers are based on tournament seeding. So that's the big thing. We need to get the big point of winning these games against Florida State. Okay, we need some help, but if we can get into that 3 or 2 seed when we get there, at least in the Coastal, that changes a lot about what the tiebreakers are. So that's kind of what we're playing for more than anything right now, is help on our tiebreakers, because it's just what seed you came in the tournament with, because they just don't have a normal knockout tournament or a double eliminate. It's just so weird.
Because that would only make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Lord help the ACC do something that makes, they would actually make sense a fair amount of the time. So that's, I think, if you're going to think about anything like what we're trying to see less than the NCAA tournament, is just setting ourselves up for a better shot at advancing in the ACC tournament. So that's what I got. I'm going to drink some water and then read this ad read from Section 103. Section 103, started by Stephen Little, Georgia Tech 40 under 40 guy from last year. It is the best spot to get officially licensed Georgia Tech gear. They got baby stuff. They got Drew Burris' NIL shirt. NIL shirt, if you buy his jersey there, he gets a cut because that's where we are in college sports right now. And they're our mailbag sponsor as well, which so grateful that they're doing that. You can get 10% off any order, like literally any of them. It does not matter what you buy. You will get 10% off if you use the code FTRS in that order, FTRS. And they always do free shipping over $70. You can always vote on what the next shirt is going to be. When the next one's coming out, don't know. But I know Jake loves his Junior's Grill shirt. I would like the Junior's Grill's French toast in my life one day, but I still have not made that a reality. But maybe one day, one can help. Section103.com, or you can find them on Twitter as well, at Section103. Quick tennis update. They didn't play any matches. They also haven't updated the brackets. That's the tennis update. That's all I have. Track and field. This was fun. Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, let's do track and field, then we'll finish the golf. I got to add a new thing that I have now been to, and that is the ACC Track and Field Championships, because those were on Tech's campus from Thursday to Saturday this past week, from May 9 to 11. Eric Singleton ran some stuff. Helena Lindsay did some stuff in the steeplechase. Amia Wilson did some stuff in the long jump. Anna Witherspoon did some stuff as well. And in the end, Virginia won the guy's side. Duke won the girl's side. Track and field being only a half-funded sport on campus, not usually going to win that many things. That's just at the run of it. As I mentioned, Eric Singleton, here are the 200 meters, set his personal best at a 21.18, and he got fifth in the 100 meters for enough for ACT, all ACC second team. Maggie, my only hope, I think the big, if you think about Tech as a whole, the best thing that can come out of this is that Eric is just so much faster because he ran track for a season, and his deadline goal routes are going to be much more lethal, and we'll just see Haynes just float one 75 yards in the first game, and we'll be like, that's why Eric ran track.
Yep.
Is for that route.
Perfect. Yep.
He's
killing it too. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Two sport athletes. Not usually our specialty, but we finally got one. I'm really happy we have one.
I know. Who's like, I'm trying to think of someone else that, DeAndre Smelter played baseball.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We also had the walk-on quarterback this past year. He subbed in for the golf team for a tournament as well. Uh-huh. I forgot his name.
He's transferring now.
Colson. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Glad we both remembered that. Helena Lindsay, third in the steeplechase. She was the only one that medaled for Tech in the 3,000 meter steeplechase. Ran that in 10:01.69. Amia Wilson jumped 6.26 meters in the long jump, got fourth. And Anna Witherspoon in the 100 meters got sixth in a 13.54. If I tried any of this, I would look stupid. Especially, I'm also 5'3, so I cannot jump over the steeplechase. Beyond that, that was good to see. I don't know where ACC championships will be next year. It's kind of interesting that it was here because a lot of them are going to be based in North Carolina going forward. So I don't know if that's like the last track and field championship not in North Carolina for a while. I think that's the first ACC championship event I have seen on campus since I got to campus too. Baseball always in North Carolina. There is no volleyball tournament. The football game's always at Bank of America Stadium. Tennis always in Cary. I lied. ACC's swimming had their championships here year. They also hosted NCAAs, so that's the second one I've seen. So okay, got to clear that up. Okay, golf, near and dear to Maggie's heart. They are right now. They finished. I think they finished. I think we've recorded. We've talked long enough.
It's not good news.
It's not the best news, but it's not yet bad news. Today was the start of the NCAA regional in Chapel Hill, hosted by the North Carolina Tar Heels. This format, there are 13 teams there. The top five will qualify for the NCAA championships in California, I think in Carlsbad. So you only have to finish top five. Doesn't matter how far behind or ahead you finish. You just got to be top five. And then if your team doesn't finish top five, the individual champ, I believe, also makes it. But the team events, what we're worried about today, we had playing Crystal Lamprecht, Riley Forrester, Hiroshi Tai, Cale Fontenot, and Carson Kim, who did round out to just kind of be our best five throughout the season. This tournament's supposed to last 3 days. There is a lot of rain coming for North Carolina on Tuesday, so they pushed the second round to today, and so they played 36 holes between this morning and this afternoon. Tech, as of right now, is fifth at 10 under, so they're in that last spot. They are three strokes ahead of Long Beach State, who is about at 7 under, but they're about to be done. We finished under par. We were second after the first round. Forrester put up a great 4-under round. Hiroshi Tai put up a great 5-under round, which was the fifth best of the day, or of the round. East Tennessee State shot 15-under in the second round. So they vaulted past everybody, but then also Clemson, North Carolina, and Baylor are ahead of us only within 5 strokes. So not a disaster there by any stretch of the imagination. Baggy, I know you are quite literally related to Bartley Forrester. So, I mean, what is it like? I guess this is you are the only one that can ask this question to. How does it feel watching a family member go out there and just like, are you like always tracking this? Just what is it like watching Bartley doing all this?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it makes me feel unathletic, but second of all, it's definitely really cool. Definitely cool to keep up with and see him. Like, I remember last year being on the golf channel. I'm like, wow, I'm literally watching my cousin on the golf channel playing the national championship right now.
Yeah.
So it's definitely really cool. Fun to talk about. I joke that he's the favorite grandkid, like at family, like dinner with the grandparents and stuff. We just talk about golf. But no, it's really fun. It's really cool to see his journey and all, just because whenever I was in high school, he came in to Tech as a preferred walk-on. So definitely kind of cool to see him go from walk-on to being one of the best players on the team. And he was like the only one that won his round on in the national championship last
year.
Right.
So that's right.
Cool journey and all he's done. So yeah, it's been cool to see and cool to have. He actually, what people don't know, I don't think, is that he grew up a huge Georgia fan.
Oh,
like
wow.
I went to their house and their basement was just like red and black everything, and now he's a Tech man, so converted him.
Well done, well done. Okay. But you're forgiven, Bartley, not that you needed that. Yeah, so he shot as I mentioned, he shot 4-under in the first round. He shot even par in the second round. Some bogeys on the par threes, but had some birdies to back it up on the fives and fours, including two on the fives. So that was good. Looking good. Christo finished +1 in both rounds. Just a topsy turvy bogey. Lots of birdies, lots of bogeys. There were very few pars on his card. And then Hiroshi Tai, generally more. He shot 200 in the second round, mostly a lot of pars, but a lot of went bogey free in the first round, which was fantastic with a 65. So they'll keep playing. I believe they're just playing stroke play. They just need a top five to qualify. So this will not be done for another couple days, which we'll update all this on Twitter. And then assuming they are top five, I will write only my second ever golf article before before they go to California. Hopefully they get to California. That is
the goal. Fingers crossed. Yeah. Sorry, everyone. I also didn't mean when I said bad news. It's just because it's changed so much. I remember, like, I literally looked at this. It's now 7:55 at night. When I looked at this at like 5:30, we were in second place, 13 under. East Tennessee State was like at 9 under. They're now 21 under. And
yeah.
We just jumped down to fifth. So I just saw that and was like, oh.
That's the wild.
We just need top five.
This is what I love about college golf that we're never going to get in the pros, is that it just, the scoreboard can change wildly in a matter of an hour. Just because your total scores, you're watching five guys contribute to one score, so it completely changes the whole dynamic.
Which it makes cool.
It makes scoreboard watching very, very hard to do at times. Because we were leading this morning in the first round, like we were in outright first for a hot second. Mm-hmm. This, I think, the I've mentioned this before, but like the narrative of this team has felt like they are still very good. Not like they lose a couple guys from last year, like Connor Howe, but the top, I mean, they still got, I mean, arguably the best guy in college right now, and Lamprecht, and he's leading the charge. Tai can absolutely throw darts every once in a while. Bartley is very reliable. Kale, reliable. Carson Kim. I mean, they're all playing here for a reason. So they are, but they're not like obviously going to win anything they show up to this year, but they'll be competitive. I'm hoping tomorrow, whenever they do next play, they start getting on that heater, because they're going to need to get on a heater like they were last year in the championship to be competitive there, because they're, mm-hmm, not a top 10 team right now. They can be one any given day, but they are not. So
that is true. Also, shout out to Hiroshi Tai. He shot a 65 in round one that tied his career best today.
Oh, career best. Oh, hell yeah. That's awesome. Sweet.
Yeah.
Love to see that. He is currently tied fifth at 7-under overall. So, okay. That is not the last thing we have. We're going to shoot it over to my interview with Davis Cook, childhood friend of mine, who was one of the coaches for Georgia Tech lacrosse, to talk about their time at the Club Lacrosse Championships and Round Rock. So let's go to that. Davis, I think you are my first childhood friend. to show up on any of my podcasts. So congratulations on that achievement, I suppose. Davis is the offensive coordinator for Georgia Tech lacrosse, something like that.
I would say the face-off coordinator and offensive assistant.
So that's okay, cool. So I mean, you're here to help us walk through everything that happened with Tech men's lacrosse this year, which was another very successful season for a perennially successful team. Fell in Round Rock in the quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals.
So yep. Utah Valley, which my East Coast bias brain just didn't realize there was a place called Utah Valley by the time that game started. So for those that are not familiar with the team, walk us through what conference y'all are in, who do y'all usually play, and how y'all stack up against the normal field of competition.
Yeah, so we are in the league itself is called the MCLA, the Men's Collegiate Lacrosse Association. And we are in the Southeastern Lacrosse Conference. So that's kind of a combination of some ACC teams and some SEC teams from, you know, your Division I football conferences. So our group is, our half of the conference is us, Alabama, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, and Georgia is our division within the conference. And then the South is Florida State, UCF, USF, and Auburn, I believe. And so, you know, pretty much we see our half of the or our division every year, and then we'll get one or two teams from the South, and then, you know, whatever out-of-conference games we can schedule. So this year we had a trip out to California to play UC Berkeley and the University of Texas. And then we played University of New Hampshire. We played Clemson and a couple other out-of-conference games as well. So
it is one of those rare sports outside of like maybe baseball where you can play a truly geographic schedule compared to the rest of the ACC where like, yeah, we're going to New York, we're going to Massachusetts or somewhere up there like that. But no, this is, you can drive to most of these games, it seems.
Yeah, pretty much aside from Nationals in Texas and our California trip, it was all driving.
Yeah.
Our furthest trip was up to Nashville to play Boston College and Vanderbilt.
Nice.
But other than that, it was all driving.
Let's talk about that Cal game, because you mentioned y'all played out there, lost that game in Cal 12-8. And in terms of just pure numbers of goals y'all scored, I think was the fewest y'all scored in the match. So, and look, you're talking to a guy who I know semblance amounts of what lacrosse is. I mean, I know the sport, but I don't know the ins and outs. Tell me what, like, when you get a repeat matchup, what goes into preparing when you have already had a first look at a team, and like, well, what do you try to attack and try to change in your all's context?
Well, so that one was a big one for us, because when we did make that trip out to California, we were missing two of our starting attackmen. And those two players ended up being, before Nationals started, they were tied for first and third in total points for the year.
Okay.
We had two guys tied for first, and then our third attackman was the second highest points total. So, you know, missing two of those top three scorers definitely did a number on our offense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the biggest thing for us was going into that first round game this week, knowing that we had our full offense totally healthy and able to go. But really, in terms of preparation, it was just watching film from the second half of the season to see what, if anything, has changed from the Cal team. And, you know, we didn't a lot that had changed, so we knew kind of what we were getting into. And we were pretty confident that with Pierce and Joseph back, that we would have a pretty good chance at getting it done on Monday.
Yeah, let's dig into that second game. So it was 15-14 win, just by the skin of your teeth. But the big difference was that first quarter going up 5-1, and then basically able to hold serve the rest of the way. Did that game play out how you thought y'all was going to play out? What was to take us through what it was like living through that game?
Well, so going up early to start like that is always nice. And it kind of helped us. Our offensive coordinator was actually unable to be at the game. And so, you know, it was myself and one of the other coaches that were kind of heading up the offense, which is something that we hadn't done all season. Wow. EJ, our offensive coordinator, hadn't not been in a game in the 15 years that he's coached here. So, you know, it was definitely a bit of a change there. But our guys stepped up a lot. And, you know, our upperclassmen leaders really helped out in terms of being leaders on the field as well as, you know, in timeouts and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It was great. And then, you know, lacrosse is really just a game of runs. So we went on our run in the first quarter, and they kind of got back into it a little bit. They tried to claw their way back into it, but we were able to hold them off. We had, you know, like I said, good offensive play throughout the game. And then our goalie stepped up really big for us as well. He made a couple of really great saves late in the game to kind of to keep us in it, or to keep them out of it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there was no, what, our 15th goal came with 6:46 left in the fourth.
Right.
So you got that's a long hold to just not have any scoring. Like, there's a bunch of goals across. To go that long at the end of a one-score game in a do-or-die situation, that I imagine you're just in coach zone, but if I was there, I'd know I'd be pins and needles watching from the stands, just praying to God nothing happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when we got back to the hotel and we were doing the stats and watching the film afterwards, we got to that point in the game where we're like, oh, wow, nobody scored after this. You know, and so it's kind of in the moment, like you said, it's just trying to do as much as you can to make sure that nobody does score after that, if possible. And, you know, obviously we'd love to add a couple of extra goals at the end there just as insurance, but, you know, it all worked out. The defense, like I said, they stood on their head a couple of times. We went man down a couple of times late in the game in that last couple of minutes. And we had a couple of great kills from our man down defense. And like I said, a couple of really great saves at the end. And, you know, it ended up being enough to hold them off.
This Utah Valley game, I was at the Tech baseball game at the same time. So I was like watching on Twitter, and I saw just the goals for Utah Valley go up and up and up. And I was like, oh dear God. Well, it's going to be one of those kind of finishes, isn't it? And then I'm walking back, and I just like, I see another goal, another goal, another goal, 12 something run. Mm-hmm. I was like, good Lord. They, and I mean, 17-14 loss, but damn near actually pulled off. I mean, I assumed 11 point comebacks are not exactly a thing in lacrosse. Just in general, what was going, that second, what was, did you make it? Was there an adjustment in the second half y'all made? Or is it what you said, like, it's just the game of runs, and the runs just happen to be longer on both sides?
Yeah, I would say more just a game of runs. I mean, at halftime, essentially, you know, usually we have some sort of adjustments to make, you know, going through halftime. And for us in that game, it was essentially just letting the guys talk themselves through it, you know, getting any frustrations out, or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it was. And obviously, you know, some of the coaches had some things to say, but there really weren't any huge adjustments made in terms of, you know, changing matchups defensively or, mm-hmm. you know, anything like that. So it just, it was a matter of, especially the guys on the sideline, bringing the juice, bringing the energy going into that second half. And, you know, we made a point of them really getting up for any sort of little play that was made. Mm-hmm. And you could really tell that the guys on the field were feeding off of that. And, you know, throughout the first half, Utah Valley had pretty much brought that same energy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we basically just said, look, it's our turn to bring that same energy and kind of try to shut them up a little bit.
Yeah.
And we had been in a similar situation this season, you know, definitely not as big of a deficit, but when we played Arizona State, I believe it was 7-2 or 9-2 at halftime. So, you know, a sizable difference. And we were able to come back and win that one at home, which was, you know, it was nice to know kind of in the back of our heads, right? We've been here before.
Right.
And this is something that is possible, you know? And it definitely helped that Arizona State was playing a game on the field behind us. And I was able to turn around a couple of times and say to the guys, like, we've been in the same situation before with those guys right there.
Yeah.
You know, who's to say we can't do it right now?
Right. I love that. Yeah. It was, look at the box score. It was 7-2 at half and then 8-2 Tech in the second half to pull that one out. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I know this, I know this team in general is like, y'all could win basically any game that's thrown in front of you. Did y'all call this season a success even with that ender? Did it feel like y'all did what y'all thought you could do?
You know, obviously, I think to really call it a season a success, you know, obviously the ultimate goal is the national championship. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, we had that in our sights. It wasn't like we went into the tournament saying, you know, a first round win is all we can ask for.
Right.
Obviously, you know, hopefully any team goes into that tournament and thinks that they can win. But I would say that it was a pretty successful season. I mean, this was probably one of our most interesting seasons in terms of how much practice we've been able to have throughout the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is my first year with the team, but, you know, hearing stories and being told things throughout the year is like, we're practicing basically 3 hours a week, which for us is less than a third of what might normally happen.
Wow.
For a season. So, you know, to have the amount of success that we did have on the amount of practice and time with the guys that we were able to get, I think was, you know, super impressive. And so, you know, we thought that that was a pretty successful part of our season. And obviously going back to back with conference championships is always a great accomplishment. So
yeah,
we were pretty happy with that as well.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's 3 hours of practice time is not, any sport, that's just not enough time
right.
to get
yeah.
to that, whatever that top tier, like we've watched sports together growing up our whole lives. We know what those guys are putting into it to make that happen. So, but that's still mighty impressive. That's awesome. 14-4 season, undefeated in conference play. My Auburn brain is loving the crap out of the fact y'all beat Bama 23-3. I know Cal isn't going to be, the ACC isn't a thing in men's lacrosse for in our context yet, but playing Cal is still kind of hilarious that y'all managed to do that twice before they show up. And then, yeah, I mean, wins against a bunch of other teams. So, Davis, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you coming in a pinch to explain this team. There are no more games this season, but for those that want to watch this guy's team play next year, and I'll admit, of the best teams on campus, like, bar none. Zach Fields, do y'all play there?
We have basically the north, I believe the northern half of Stamps Field.
Yep.
And I will say, in my playing career throughout being in lacrosse, this has got to be one of the best home environments that I've ever played in. You know, obviously with the parking deck right up against the fields, and the set of bleachers that we had built, you know, everyone's lining the side of the field and, you know, a couple of fraternities up on the parking deck. It's a great home atmosphere, especially the Georgia game this year was awesome.
Sweet.
Just having it packed out was great. So definitely come see us in the spring.
Absolutely will. I'm going to make it a priority for 2025. Davis, thanks a ton, man.
Thank you.
Maggie, thank you for stepping in.
It was a great time. Yeah.
Jake and Akshay, they left me hanging. So,
yeah.
Thanks as always.
If this ever happens again, always just text me and I'll
Thank
do
goodness.
It.
Sweet. Yeah. You'll soon be our first Dallas co-host, I assume. Whatever the time comes for you to move. Thank you for growing the from the Rumble seat empire. Obviously, that's a thing that's a high priority for us. Yes, that's how it'll go down. If you want to find us, we're at fromtherumbleseat.com on the normal Webernets. Our email, same, fromtherumbleseat@gmail.com. We'll accept any questions at any time. We'll throw them in the mailbag. We are. If you want to come write for us, you can come write for us. That's what Maggie did. She's like, I want to come write for y'all. And sure enough, here she is writing for us now. You can find us on Twitter at FTRSblog. I'm at Jack Nicholas. Maggie's at Scroggs_Maggie. Yeah,
Rick.
That's
wow,
right.
Impress.
Yes, I got it. You can find Section 103 at Section 103 or Section103.com. This podcast will be on any podcast platform and YouTube if you just want to watch it there. With that, Good night. Good luck. Good luck.